This is the Live Feed. It's your connection to live music and entertainment in Winona. Support for this program is made possible by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.
On this episode of The Live Feed, we conclude our coverage of Midwest Music Fest with a visit from Galen Lee. Galen is a classically trained violinist, the 2016 winner of NPR's Tiny Desk Contest, and a public speaker. She fills us in on what it's like living with brittle bone syndrome and how she found her way to the violin. Galen also shares the complicated relationship she has with the word inspiration and how people use it to describe individuals.
I haven't found a definition of inspiration that doesn't bother me on some level, but I understand that it's a real thing because I am also inspired by people.
I'm Terry Tensett, and you're listening to The Live Feed. We're at Midwest Music Fest. It's Terry Tensett Market, and I am here with Galen Lee. Some of you might know her as the Tiny Desk Musician winner with NPR. Some of you may know her as an advocate. Galen, do you view yourself as an advocate first or a musician first?
I think they're just kind of different parts of this, me. So, I've been playing music a lot longer, I suppose, than I've been doing public advocacy work. So maybe that's how I identify first, but they really are both important to me.
Now, wanted to talk about how your violin teacher really significantly changed your life. For people who don't know you, you fell in love with watching an orchestra perform, and then you wanted to pick an instrument. Can you tell people why you decided to go with the violin?
Well, yeah, I just really loved the sound of the strings. And so the next year when we had a chance to join orchestra, I went in, and because of my disability, my arms and legs are pretty short. And so I knew I wasn't going to be able to play like the typical way. And luckily, the teacher I had was open-minded enough to kind of help me experiment. And so we tried like a tiny little violin, but it was too big. And I tried a cello. That was actually the first instrument that I was drawn to. But it was just too big to play. And so I don't know which one of us thought of it, but eventually we came upon playing the violin like a cello. And because she had the knowledge to help me like adapt the way I played, it worked. And I hold my bow like a bass player does. And I've been playing that way for 23 years.
Kind of used to it. Some people say there's healing properties to playing a stringed instrument close to you. There's people that have viewed the harp that way, the cello that way. And I know that you live with a certain amount of pain. Have you found relief in the vibrations from the instrument?
I don't know. I've never played for that reason, I guess, if that makes any sense. I've always just played because I like to play, but I do notice no matter how I feel when I start playing, I always feel better afterwards. So I know there must be some healing properties to playing. And I do think it could be traced to the vibrations. That's interesting. I haven't really heard that said out loud before. But you do kind of wonder because it's like against your body and you're feeling these vibrations. And that is kind of a cool part about the way I play and why I was drawn to cello. And I also love harp, so that's kind of neat. I got a mini harp for Christmas.
Oh, yeah? Have you been rocking that out? Are you going to bring it as part of your act?
Maybe in like 12 years. Not quite at that level yet, but it's pretty fun.
For you growing up with brittle bone syndrome, right, you had a choice, surgery or not surgery. At what age were you faced with that decision?
Well, I was lucky in that my parents had always left that up to me. And for me, I felt like that was the right decision to like let the kid decide. I know sometimes parents begin surgeries on their children when they're really small, and I understand the reasons, but my parents didn't feel comfortable doing that, so they said I could decide if I wanted to try to walk someday if I wanted to do those surgeries. But I kept putting it off because it was one surgery per limb, so it would have been basically 4 summers where I'd be in the hospital. And I had a really full childhood. I have 3 siblings and millions of cousins and a lot of friends. And we were always busy. And I never really felt like putting my life on hold. And then once I started playing the violin, I really didn't want to do the surgery because it could have damaged my nerves in my arms, and I didn't want to lose the ability to play. So that was sort of when the turning point came. You know, and wheelchairs are only getting better, and you could tell, you know, they were improving, and I just didn't feel like it was a super necessary part of the equation for happiness for me. So I decided not to. By the time I was in junior high, I pretty much had decided that I wasn't going to do it. But it was sort of a gradual realization.
Did you get a lot of pushback from friends and family?
No. Okay. My family is pretty cool. So they were, you know, they just left it up to me. And, you know, there's no guarantee that those surgeries work either. So I could have maybe been able to walk, but I could have also maybe only been able to stand for short periods of time. And to gain that, it just wasn't like a good trade-off for me. And I have a different kind of brittle bones in that I don't break my bones very often unless I fall. And so I think probably some people, if they break a lot more, or, you know, like the rods might help strengthen. I don't really know. I just, for me, it wasn't the right decision. So I have had some surgeries. Like I had a really big spinal fusion when I was 18. Because that was a life or death thing. My scoliosis was very bad. And over time, it would have compromised my lung function. So I'm not like opposed to surgeries. But for me, walking wasn't like the big goal, you know.
You said you had a great childhood, right? You have this amazing life where you get to travel and do things that you love.
Yeah.
Is there anything you feel like you've had to miss out on?
Not really. I mean, I love dancing. And if, I guess, as a younger kid, I used to feel like if I hadn't been born in a wheelchair, like with a wheelchair, needing a wheelchair. I wasn't born in a wheelchair, by the way, but you know what I mean. I can rephrase that. If I had not been born needing to use a wheelchair, then I might have gotten into dancing, but I think music fills a similar space. And so, especially the older I got, the less I felt like I was missing out, I guess. And especially now as an adult, because we are doing what we really want to be doing and love to do, and I realize, like, not everybody is in that situation, and so I feel lucky to be able to do what we want to do, you know? This is Watch the World Unfold. It's about wishing you knew what was coming next, but not getting to know until you get there.
Thank you.
advice, need advice. You have no clue what you're doing. Moral compass, it is spinning. An identity unhinged. Where to turn, where to turn? There's so many opinions, and they're all a little different. And the outlook's getting dim. What makes you think that you'll ever get there? What makes you think you deserve to know? Who are you really? Are you so important? Take a look around and watch the world unfold. Watch the world unfold. Watch the world unfold. Watch the world
You've been listening to the hauntingly beautiful sounds of Galen Lee during Midwest Music Fest on the live feed. I'm Terry Tensett, taking you back to my interview with Galen as she describes her complicated relationship with the word inspiration, her creative process, and a film she was recently in.
I was watching a talk. I think it was like an hour-long talk. You had mentioned about people saying you're so inspirational. What is your definition of a true inspirational person?
I think that if you're really inspired by someone, it's because they are doing something. It kind of inspires you to want to live more authentically. I don't even know. Like, I really have to think about that, because it can be used so negatively, in my opinion, that I don't know. I think when you're inspired by someone, it's because you genuinely think what they're doing is cool. You know what I'm saying? And that's not like a very eloquent definition, but I think it does kind of separate it from people who feel like pity and say the word inspiration when what they really mean is pity. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because if, you know, just because I get out in public, that doesn't mean I'm doing anything inspiring. I'm, like, going grocery shopping or whatever. But just because you are getting out and going grocery shopping or living your daily life, that's not really inspiring, because that's what anyone would do. But it's when people go above and beyond, I guess, to do, like, to really do something. I don't know. You know what I mean? I wish I had a better word for that. I'm not offended when people say that, like, my music inspires them, or what Paul and I are doing inspires them, because I do think that people want to have examples of, like, living courageously. But living courageously is not the same thing as existing with a disability. You know what I'm saying? Because that's just, like, existing. And I don't think people with disabilities want to be thought of as inspiring for just being, you know, because that's a very low bar. You know what I mean? People want to, like, do things that they cycle. I don't know. Yeah, that's a tricky one. Yeah, make a different or an impact. Or I wish I had a better way to do it, because it is sort of a gray area, and I totally understand that. I guess it's, you know, to me, it's really obvious if somebody is coming from a place of pity, because they'll say things like, I'm so inspired. If I were you, I don't think I would ever, you know. And then it's basically saying, like, I had one guy actually say, I don't know if you want to use this in the interview, but I had one guy actually say, like, if I were you, I think I'd kill myself. And that was like,
oh no,
like, that's like, my life is not sucky. Like, because what they are assuming is that your life is bad and somehow you're overcoming your own bad circumstances. But in reality, I think that's just a society's preconceived notion of what disability is. And really, a lot of people I know with disabilities wouldn't, you know, trade their lives because it's part of who they are. And if they're doing things that they're happy about or, like, satisfied with their existence, then they don't need a different body to enjoy it. That's sort of philosophical, but you know what I mean?
I do get it.
Yeah, the inspiration thing is a hard one to talk about because I just don't know. I haven't found a definition of inspiration that doesn't bother me on some level, but I understand that it's a real thing because I am also inspired by people. You know what I mean? So I'm not going to say that it's wrong to be inspired. It's just, what are you inspired by? You know, you have to really analyze. Is it coming from a place of pity or is it coming from a place of like, wow, that kicks butt. Like, that's so cool. And I want to try to, you know, that inspires me to take action. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Make a difference.
Yeah, make a difference.
Yeah. For you creating music, what's that process like?
Well, playing music is a lot about listening to the harmonies that are going on around me, whether it's from my looping pedal or another person, or I'm playing off of that and making an interesting contrast of sound. When I'm writing music, a lot of times I'm like in a quiet space where I'm just kind of by myself and stuff just kind of pops in, and then finishing it is the hardest part, you know? Like, a lot of times the beginning comes very easily and then the end is where you have to really, like, sit down and finish it. And I just want to make that unique as well. You know, like, I think everybody, you know, like, if you can say something in a little bit of a different way or make a little different sound than people are expecting, I think that's what kind of draws people in without having to be too, like, vague or, you know, you don't want to be so abstract that people don't understand what's going on. But yeah, having a little bit of a unique twist, I think, is what draws people in. So I try to do that with harmony and then with words, too.
What have people said about your music?
Everybody says it's haunting. And that is a cool word. It's funny because I don't feel haunted while I'm playing it. You know what I mean? But I get it. I think the violin has a little bit of a mournful quality. The way the long notes and... it's almost, you know, it's like a human voice almost. And so I can understand why people use that word. I just think a lot in harmonies. That's like really my main thing. And I've had to get better at rhythm and coming up with interesting rhythms because of the looping pedal. And that's been a really fun challenge for me because that wasn't the area that I focused a lot on before.
Right. A fellow musician introduced you to using the looping pedal.
Yeah. Yep. Alan Sparhawk of Low. Also plays in a duo with me, and when we first started, the band was called The Murder of Crows, well, still is called The Murder of Crows, and he did all the looping for me, and I had never seen a looping pedal, and he kind of, like, he would operate it, and then I would play harmonies to what I was hearing, which is something I really enjoy doing, but then one day he brought it over, my pedal that I have now, and he said, I'd like you to have this. I think you should experiment with it. I think you'll have fun playing around. And he was so right. Like, the first night that I got a chance to play with it, I remember just being like, oh my gosh, like, there's so much I could do with this thing.
Game changer.
And, yeah, it really was. That was probably the biggest. And then around the same, maybe a little bit before that, I had just written my first song. So a lot of things changed pretty suddenly all at once, and I attribute that to playing with him because he has a very different style than me, and we complement each other, but it's not the same. And I think that kind of opened my brain to some new parts that maybe weren't explored.
You were recently in a Project Funk Plus One that's coming out this spring. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, that was so cool. So in high school and college, my favorite band was the Decemberists, and I got an email from one of them. His name is Chris Funk. He's in the Decemberists, and he's doing like a little music mini documentary series on different musicians that kind of have an innovative way of doing things, not necessarily like playing the instrument, but cool instruments that they've made, or everybody had a different angle. And so he wanted to do a story with me, and I was like, oh my gosh, yeah, that would be awesome. And so he came to Duluth and filmed for a couple of days. I got to talk to him and know him, and it was very, very fun, and just because I'm a pretty huge fan of what they have done musically. And so, yeah, and it hasn't come out yet, but I know it's coming. Like, I know that it's eventually going to be released, and I'm really excited to see it.
I saw some of the footage on YouTube, so there's a trailer, just to let you know. Yeah, exactly.
They're like legit. They're from like CNN and like, I mean, so yeah, the cinematography is really cool.
Yeah, it looks great.
They like are, they knew what they were doing. I was like, whoa, this is another level. It's cool though. Yeah. I'm going to do a song for you that I wrote. It's called Let It Go. It's not a Frozen cover. I played it a lot of elementary schools, and I always hear at least one kid go, when I announce it. And I have to be like, sorry, kid, this is not the song for you. But it's my version. It's about letting go of the emotions that don't serve you anymore. Thank you. So, this next song is the song that I entered into the Tiny Desk Contest over a year ago. Time is very fast. And it is about love and about how love is beautiful, even when it's difficult. And yeah, and I think we all probably can relate to that on some level. If anyone can't, you are lucky. So here it is. This is Someday We'll Linger in the Sun.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you.
You're listening to The Live Feed and our coverage of Midwest Music Fest. I'm Terry Tunsett, your host. We now return to my interview with classically trained violinist and songwriter Galen Lee. We will learn how winning NPR's Tiny Desk Contest changed her life, sexuality challenges when living with brittle bone syndrome, and how she's a girly girl at times.
For you, the Tiny Desk thing like kind of changed everything for you. You and your husband are like, okay, we're packing up, we're selling everything, we're packing up the van, I'm quitting my job and I'm hitting the road. How frightening is that?
Well, we had like a little bit of a safety net in that at the very beginning, he had a 7-month leave of absence. So, which was really cool of his employer to do. They knew that this was a really neat opportunity, but we didn't know if it'd be sustainable. So we had this like idea where if after 7 months we were like, no way, this is not for us, that we could go back to our normal lives.
Nice.
But we recently decided not to go back to our normal lives. So he actually did quit about a month ago. And so that was cool. But I mean, it's been a really good tour. It keeps getting better and it's really fun. I mean, we're learning a lot and it's pretty hard. Like, it's a pretty intense lifestyle, but we're learning how to like navigate that, and hopefully it'll get easier. You know what I mean?
What happens when the tour ends then?
Well, it's not really ending. That's the thing. So I mean, we're going to be home a little bit in June for like 3 weeks, and then we're just going to go out in like chunks because the country is so big. America is huge. And then Europe too. We're going to go out to Wales in August for a festival.
Yeah, you had a GoFundMe campaign, yeah. Like $8,000 to help you go out overseas.
Yeah, because that was kind of an awesome opportunity to go, but we were like, well, it's not budgeted for at all because it kind of came up suddenly. And so, yeah, the GoFundMe was awesome. I think we're going to release a little 7-inch to help fund the next trip. But that's the thing. Europe, for me, is not like it's like a building block thing. Like, hopefully it'll get better, but it's not super cheap to go to Europe. So we're going to try to go a couple times a year, but most of it's going to be in the U.S. and we drive and play shows and meet people, and it's been a really fun year. Yeah.
One thing I wanted to touch on quickly, because I know your time is valuable and you're going to be on stage soon. You had what I thought was a very brave talk about disabilities and sexuality and what it was like trying to date or not date through college.
Yeah.
When you look back at that, before you got married to Paul, what are some of the big things that stood out to you?
Well, it was just the idea that I think people are afraid to venture into the area of dating someone with an obvious disability because they don't know how other people judge them. And because I ended up marrying Paul and we've talked about it, like, I know that it is like an area, it's like kind of a big unknown, you know, not so much for me, but for the other person, because I've been used to like filtering out society feedback that's not necessary. You know what I mean? Because I live it. But if it's somebody that you meet and they've never really been around people with disabilities or it's never been a really big part of their life, that's a pretty big shift of thought to go through. And so when we did get together, it kind of like it helped me to realize that you can't, it's not that people are jerks and they don't want to date someone, it's that we don't talk about it and nobody knows how anyone's going to respond. You know what I mean? So I think if we had sexuality and disability as a little bigger part of the dialogue, especially around like puberty when everyone's like not sure, you know what I mean? I think it might help a little bit to take some of the fear out of it because it's just a matter of, well, what are people going to say? What's my family going to say? You know what I mean? And that doesn't have to be like that, except for that we haven't really talked about it. I mean, 100 years ago, people with disabilities were not even integrated at all. They were like in back bedrooms and stuff. You know what I mean? So we've come
a... To some extent, there's still issues, right?
Oh, there's tons of issues still, for sure. But I mean, think about where we were 100 years ago and where we are now. It's like such a big shift, but sexuality has to catch up to like some of the other areas where we're already better integrated, like education. You know what I mean? And then there's still, like, as you know, like, tons of other barriers still that still exist, but it's getting better, you know? I certainly was glad to be born in 1984, because I feel like even a decade earlier, you know, I mean, even in the 70s is when they finally made it required to try to mainstream. That's not even that long ago. I mean,
really isn't.
Yeah, so it's just, I feel fortunate to have been born when I was born, and I think that's a big part of why my life has unfolded this way is just the time that I was alive.
I do know that you do enjoy some of the girly girl things, like you like sparkly jewelry, you like your purses and what have you.
Yep. Oh, yeah. No, I got a big pink flower in my hair right now. Yeah, I'm a fan of that. I think it's important to just not care so much about what society thinks of what you are like physically or, you know, like how you fit in, but just go with what you personally actually enjoy. And the more people that live authentically in general, I think the better we will be. You know, not have to be afraid of each other's judgments and stuff. And realizing that people who do judge you aren't really, I mean, why do we want to please vote? You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, just find the friends, but don't make you be a certain way.
It sounds like you're doing this for yourself and other people just, they end up benefiting from it too.
Well, I think anytime people are authentic, they benefit other people. I really do. I think it has a ripple effect. So that's a good way to, like, quote-unquote, inspire people to just be themselves, but to be yourself, and then people can feel comfortable to just be themselves, too, you know?
Anything else you want to tell people? You had some kind of word of wisdom or anything you want to wrap up about how you feel about performing and getting out there?
Well, I guess I think that performance is super fun, and I'm very grateful that we get to do it, but I think that performance is a very small piece of what music actually is, and so any way you want to be involved, even if it's just playing in your living room, it's not less valuable than performing, because it's all part of this very big... My little niece was dancing the other day, and she's like 10 months old. Like, babies don't learn how to dance, they just know how to. So music is a very ingrained part of us, you know what I mean? So connecting with it in any way is positive, I think.
How do people get a hold of you?
I have a website. It's violinscratches.com. And there's like some information and videos and a calendar and then a contact form and all sorts of things. Newsletter, sign up, all these things. So that's probably the best one-stop shop for figuring out, you know, where I'm going to be. But I like Winona. I'm glad to be back.
Yeah, you've been here a couple times now. Yeah.
Every show has been really fun, and I bet this is no exception. So, yeah.
Well, thanks for visiting.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, thanks. You bet. Thanks, Terry. You bet. Sweet. That's why they won't see the handshake. Yeah, but, you know. Yeah. This is the first song I ever wrote. So, as I said, I was playing with Alan Sparhawk in our band, The Murder of Crows, and we pretty much were just doing instrumentals, and then one day, kind of out of nowhere, I wrote a song, and it was kind of weird, so I was like, hey, this is weird, but I wrote a song. Can I play it for you? And he said, sure. And he said, that's good. Let's do that tomorrow night. So we did it the next day in public, which was kind of terrifying, but I think it's a good way so you don't overthink it. And so this is called Grace and a Tender Hand. Just this year, I figured out a loop for it so I could do it solo. So here it is. Thank you. I don't have a name for what I want to bring you. And I don't understand all you've seen or all that you have done. But if I could bring you peace today, my battle would be won. You're weighted down with worry. You doubt what you are worth. Question if you'll ever know your place upon the earth. But if you saw what I see, this perfect person standing next to me, if you could kindly let yourself be, your battle would be won. So much. Have a great rest of your Midwest Music Fest. Thank you. I'm Galen Lee. See you later. Thank you. Sweet.
Thanks again to Galen Lee for visiting with us on the live feed. More information on Galen can be found at violinscratches.com. We here at KQAL would also like to thank all who made Midwest Music Fest possible. More information on Midwest Music Fest can be found at midwestmusicfest.org. Another additional thank you goes out to Ben Asef and his team at Northern Sun Productions for helping us obtain recordings during Midwest Music Fest. More information on Northern Sun Productions can be found at northernsunproductions.com and on Facebook. I'm Terry Tunset, and you've been listening to The Live Feed.
Thanks for listening to The Live Feed. The Live Feed is produced by KQAL-FM on the campus of Winona State University. For more information on tonight's show, visit us at kqal.org.